which sites deserve immediate financial attention, looks at the risk to the surrounding communities, the environment, and public concern. Become informed about hazardous waste sites in your area and let the EPA and your state and national representatives know that you want them cleaned up. For more information, check out earthcareradio.org. I'm Vicki Wolf with CLEAN, Citizens League for Environmental Action Now. And that's Earth Care for today and a better tomorrow.
Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM, kpft.org universally. Coming up next, we've got the New Capital Show with Leo Gold, followed by Free Speech Radio News at 4 o'clock and KPFT's local news at 4:30. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold. Great to be with you today on an absolutely, absolutely beautiful, beautiful day here in Houston, Texas. Coming to you from the studios at 90.1 FM, KPFT, part of the Pacifica Radio Network. It is a beautiful day. I walked here from my office through several blocks of Montrose and past all these graceful old bungalows and mansions, and the birds were chirping, and the sun is just golden, and the, I don't know, everything's fragrant, and it just, I just felt great. I felt great. I hope you're feeling great. I hope you're having a great, great day. Even though it's been kind of a difficult news week, I guess you would say, for the progressive side of the world. Maybe not. We're going to take your calls and get your opinion on that. I've got my hot tea. Still under the weather, but I'm ready to go. 713-526-5738 is the telephone number here to call. NewCapitalShow.com and my email, LeoGold@NewCapitalShow.com. You can reach me there and also on Facebook. You can reach me at Leo Gold on Facebook. So much news this week. The election for senator in Massachusetts, of course, has dominated the headlines over the past few days. What are your thoughts on that? Healthcare, where does that leave the healthcare reform or healthcare insurance reform issue? Word out today from the House side of things. Speaker Pelosi apparently indicating that there is simply not enough support on among the liberal section of the House Democratic Caucus for the Senate bill. The House could go ahead and adopt the bill that was passed recently in the Senate with no changes, but apparently there's no appetite to do that. Should there be appetite? There are some Democrats who are arguing that that's exactly what should happen. Should that happen? Unfortunately, a lot of this has pushed Haiti out of the headlines. Incredible to imagine that an earthquake and a tragedy of this magnitude just a few days later, domestic politics would be intruding on that news, but in fact, I think it has. So what do we do to keep that in the news? How do we keep that in the news, I think, has been and is becoming a major, major question. And as always, if anybody has any information out there, you have organizations that you favor who are doing work in Haiti, please call in and let everybody know. 713-526-5738. On that note, I got an email message. Somebody sent me something earlier. talking about homes needed for Haitian children. PSA could be formulated. This is a group, and again, I don't have time to check out all these groups, but this is a group called kidsindistress.org. Again, I can't vouch for it, but apparently they are going to be doing some work to help bring children to the United States and put them in foster homes. Kidsindistress.org is the organization, and so I'm announcing that again with the disclosure that I have gone to their website, but I have not dug deep to find out if they are something that you want to become involved with. But if somebody knows something about them, let us know here. 713-526-5738. I'd like to at least get a couple of callers today who can give us some updates on organizations that they know about, on efforts that they know about, that they can represent are reputable, and that can help direct people in ways and to organizations and in toward causes that they believe in. I think that's the very least that we can do to keep Haiti in the headlines, and I'll continue to do that over the coming weeks. 713-526-5738 if you want to chime in on that. I talked about Partners in Health, which has become, I think, better known over the last week. Dr. Paul Farmer, an American physician who has done lots of work in Haiti for the past couple of decades, heads that organization, and I have been with fundraisers and two fundraisers by Partners in Health, and I think I can represent that they are doing excellent work, so that would be an organization, and there are many others, of course, that you could turn to as well. The news continues to be very difficult out of Haiti. People are leaving the capital, Port-au-Prince, and going into the countryside where they can hopefully find food and shelter and something less than the absolute traumatic devastation that is in the capital city. People continue to die there. The estimates are that 10,000 plus a day continue. This is 8-9 days after this terrible earthquake. 10,000 people a day, 8-9 days after the earthquake, continue to lose their lives and to die. And, of course, there is controversy about whether the American military presence in the ports of entry is having a constructive effect or is hindering the flow of supplies into the country. Amy Goodman talked about this and has talked about this, but there is controversy about that. All I can say is I hope that the effort is being managed in such a way. I hope that the effort is being managed in a way to speed aid as quickly as possible to those who need it. More big news out today. I mean, there is big news all over the place. This is enormous news for us in the United States, at the very least. Let me see if I can get to it here. The Supreme Court today, you may or may not have heard, the Supreme Court has overturned key campaign limits. You may have heard or remember a law passed in the early 2000s called McCain-Feingold. And in fact, there have been restrictions, believe it or not, on the ability of corporations to give directly to political campaigns. And so there have been all these back alleyways developed. I shouldn't say back alleyways, but I should say roundabout ways developed, in which corporations have funneled money through other means. But corporations have been proscribed really from the beginning of the last century, from the time of Theodore Roosevelt, from making direct contributions to political campaigns. Well, apparently, those days are over. The news from Adam Liptak of the New York Times, decision handed down earlier today, sweeping aside a century-old understanding and overruling two important precedents, a bitterly divided Supreme Court. And apparently it's pretty bitterly divided, because the minority in this argument wrote a very, very angry dissent. Anyways, a bitterly divided Supreme Court on Thursday ruled that the government may not ban political spending by corporations in candidate elections. Oh, joy. You got it? The Supreme Court today ruled that the government may not ban political spending by corporations in candidate elections. The ruling was a vindication, the majority said, of the First Amendment's most basic free speech principle, that the government has no business regulating political speech. The dissenter said allowing corporate money to flood the political marketplace will corrupt democracy. The 5-4 decision, again, 5-4 by one vote, decision represented a sharp doctrinal shift, and it will have major political and practical consequences. Specialists in campaign finance law said they expected the decision, which also applies to labor unions and other organizations, to reshape the way elections are conducted. Justice Anthony Kennedy, who wrote for the majority, said, quote, if the First Amendment has any force, it prohibits Congress from fining or jailing citizens or associations of citizens for simply engaging in political speech. And that opinion was joined by the four conservative members of the Supreme Court. I don't know if I can name them all. Scalia, Thomas, I'm totally going blank. There's the new guy. Come on, Afshar. Bush put in the new guy. Anyway. Roberts is the Chief Justice. And then Alito. Those are the four. Those are the four conservative members of the court, and they joined Kennedy in, the, in this opinion. In the minority, Justice John Paul Stevens read a long dissent from the bench. He said the majority had committed a grave error in treating corporate speech the same as that of human beings. We talk about this on KPFT all the time. The fact that corporations are often accorded under law certain rights that resemble those, if they are not exact replicas of those accorded to individuals. And apparently, the majority for the Supreme Court, right, the majority in this decision, have continued to accord and do accord corporations that profile. In the case of Kennedy, he's saying that, essentially, associations of citizens, a corporation is an association of citizens, and therefore it should not be prohibited from engaging in political speech. Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, the author, one of the authors of the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law, called the ruling a terrible mistake. Quote, terrible mistake. Ignoring important principles of judicial restraint and respect for precedent, the court has given corporate money a breathtaking new role in federal campaigns. So there it is. What it means is that you can expect corporations to absolutely and really openly, without restriction, make payments to political campaigns of individuals running for office. This removes the constraint on that. What are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on this decision? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it something that you may disagree with but seems right in principle that there should be no restrictions on political free speech, even if it's being paid for by a corporation? Or is this a mistake? Corporations should be prescribed as they basically have been for the past 100 years. And what will the effect be? Some commentators are saying that this is a help to the Republican Party, which traditionally has had greater support in corporate circles and will be a hindrance to Democrats, which has been supported more by labor unions. Although this will free labor unions to give in the same way that corporations give. Commentators are also saying, you ain't seen nothing yet. For the media buys during political campaigns. You think you've seen ads and robocalls heard robocalls and seen ads, and increasingly, I guess it's through text messages and emails and all sorts of other alternative media and new media methods. You ain't seen nothing yet. The stakes just got higher and the money just got bigger in political campaigns. Again, with some believing that it's going to ultimately benefit Republicans more than Democrats, that this incremental new money that's now going to come directly from corporations as a result of the Supreme Court ruling is going to go more disproportionately to Republicans. I don't know. Maybe so. What do you think? 713-526-5738. So we have this week, the election for senator in Massachusetts. This was to take the place of Senator Ted Kennedy, who passed away recently. His seat, a special election held, and by all accounts, the Democrat Martha Coakley running in that election did a very poor job. That seems to be the consensus. But it doesn't seem to be the only explanation for what happened in Massachusetts. And what happened in Massachusetts was a Republican was elected in a state where Republicans are not very successful. Apparently, approximately 13% of Massachusetts residents affiliate or claim affiliation with the Republican Party. 13%. So to win 50-something 2% of the vote, right? The Republican candidate, Mr. Brown, who before this was a fairly little-known state representative, had to get lots of independents to vote for him. And apparently he did exactly that. And apparently he ran what even Democrats, what even the White House is calling a spectacular campaign. Those are the words of David Axelrod, one of the prime advisors to Barack Obama, said he ran a spectacular campaign. So given that he ran a spectacular campaign and Ms. Coakley ran a dismal campaign, does that account for everything that happened in Massachusetts? Many people are saying no. This was a rebuke of the first year of the Obama presidency. Is that right? And if so, what is your advice to the president? If you want to give the president advice. You may be a Republican. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. What does success in this country look like? What does political success look like? And whether you are Democrat or Republican, progressive, non-affiliated, independent, what advice would you give the president of the United States right now? Would you tell him to back off the health care reforms? Would you tell him to change the health care reforms? If so, in what way? Would you tell him to adopt the Senate, or would you suggest that the House adopt the Senate reforms and that the president then sign those? Are those still valid? Was the president's focus, or has it been wrong for the past year? Should he have been focused more on job creation? They did pass the Stimulus Act. Was it the wrong Stimulus Act? Did it not preserve the right jobs? Was the preservation of teachers' jobs and policemen's jobs and firemen's jobs, which is what the stimulus did quite a bit of focus on, the preservation of those jobs, the funneling of federal funds to states so that they could continue to retain the employment of those workers? Should there have been something different? Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in the early 1930s, after coming to office, established the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, which employed a couple of million young men, building trails in national parks, restoring the environment, planting literally billions of trees were planted in this country. I've always wanted to see that for the past year. There are critics of the president now on the left and the right. Certainly many who listen to this station have been at least somewhat disappointed by the president and felt that he has been too close to, call it, business interests. And, of course, the right thinks he's been too aligned with liberal interests. So what are you to do if you're Barack Obama? How do you solve and cut this Gordian knot That is American politics in the year 2010, an incredibly fascinating time for American politics. It's like everybody's at everybody else. I don't have the answers. I've got opinions, but I'd be curious to hear yours. The president, I think, is showing some of what he intends to do today with another big announcement for the day. This morning, Goldman Sachs announced it's doing just fine, thank you. No surprise to anybody. Goldman Sachs announced that it earned $13.5 billion last year on revenue of $45.2 billion. Now, that is after they have paid their employees. I'm telling you, there has never been a money machine like Goldman Sachs. Love it or hate it, you have to kind of say, wow. $45.2 billion in profits, I'm sorry, in revenues, and $13.4 billion in profits the year after the entire banking system was bailed out. $13.4 billion in profit after it pays all of its employees. $13.4 billion in profit, that is, to shareholders. Goldman disclosed that it had set aside $16.2 billion for revenues. I'm sorry, revenues for bonuses and compensation. The amount was 50% higher than in 2008, but it was below the record in 2007. The figure for 2009 represents 35.8% of revenue, which is actually down from 2008 when it was 48% of revenue. So what do we know? We know that the banks are doing quite well, and Goldman Sachs especially is doing extremely well, the most prestigious of really the investment banks. What does the president do? 2 days after the election in Massachusetts, which has sent shivers down the spine of Democrats, we see a picture and a news story. President Obama appears in public with his aides, his vice president, and standing next to him is a very tall man. A very tall older man, whose name is Paul Volcker. Paul Volcker was once the chairman of the Federal Reserve. He was put into that position by Jimmy Carter. And he was retained in that position by Ronald Reagan when he became president in 1980. Rather, 81. And Paul Volcker is best known for breaking the back of inflation in the 1980s when inflation ran rampant. Coming out of the 1970s, Paul Volcker tightened monetary policy. That is to say, he withdrew liquidity from the system and threw the U.S. into a very deep recession in the early 1980s. But it brought down inflation. Paul Volcker, coming into the Obama administration and in the early days of the Obama administration, appeared to be viewed as a wise man who would be listened to and consulted deeply and assiduously by the Obama administration. It hasn't turned out to be the case. Economic policy has been driven more by Lawrence Summers and Timothy Geithner, the Secretary of the Treasury. Well, today's picture, 2 days after the Massachusetts election, Paul Volcker stands right next to the president, Timothy Geithner a few places away. And frankly, I don't see Larry Summers in the picture. Maybe he is there, but I don't see him. And he announces what? The president announces that huge banks had nearly brought down the economy by taking, quote, huge reckless risks in pursuit of quick profits and massive bonuses. President Obama on Thursday proposed legislation to limit the scope and size of large financial institutions. In other words, the president is now apparently going to get tough with the banks, or tougher than he has been. And I think there are many people who believed or encouraged the president from the outset to be very tough with the banks. And it's a question as to whether he was or has been. And there are many who believe that what happened in Massachusetts was in part, at least, perhaps in significant measure, fed by those dissatisfied, maybe not so much with the overall, shall we say, idea of healthcare reform, but with the particular implementation of it, or rather, the implementation of healthcare reform over, in preference, in priority, at least in perception, to efforts by the Obama administration to create jobs. After all, if you don't have a job, healthcare is not your biggest concern. Having a job is. And secondly, perhaps a failure by the Obama administration to take tougher measures against U.S. banks. Let's recall, however, that so much of the bailout was already in place under the Bush administration. It was done in September and November and October. That's not the usual order. In 2008, under President Bush, and passed by that Congress. Lots in the news. What are your thoughts? What does the president do next? What do the Democrats do next? What should the Republicans do next? What should the country do next? I'm seeing all sorts of despair by many people on liberal blogs, people saying this is the end of American democracy this week. This week is a watershed. This is the end of the American Republic. Combine the election in Massachusetts, they say, which reveals that the American electorate has gone absolutely insane. Lower middle class people who barely have health care and jobs themselves are voting against Democrats. Voting back in Republicans who, these complainers claim, will slit the throats of middle America just like they did before under Bush and Reagan. They will do it again. And yet they're getting voted in by middle Americans. Independents. Angry people in Massachusetts. And then later this week, we see the Supreme Court say corporations can pour all the money they want into elections. Some people are saying this is the end of the American Republic this week, and this week was it. I don't know. 713-526-5738. Maybe we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we will take your calls. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the New Capital Show. So, do we have the liberal week from hell, or is this just the beginning of a new beginning? Let's take Krista on line two. Krista, welcome to the show.
Hi, Leo. Thank you. You threw out a lot of topics, and there's a lot to think about.
I didn't do it.
Well,
the modern age threw them out.
That's true. In listening to you, I want to start with the Supreme Court's overturning the McCain-Feingold law. And when I think about that, my first thought is, that's good. That's good because, as you said, corporations have been giving money to candidates through these roundabout ways. And that means I can't see it. And as a member of this, you know, body politic, I think it would benefit me to know who is giving to whom. For example, you know, if Monsanto is supporting a candidate, I'm not going to support that candidate. That just is information. It's more information for me as a voter.
So you think dragging the thing out into the light of day is actually going to have a contrary effect to what most people are expecting?
Yeah,
That it may be more money, but that it's not going to change the thing so much from what it currently is that it's going to throw all the elections to Republicans. That there's going to be more transparency because we're going to see Monsanto gave money to John Cornyn, and so we see it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to turn more elections to Republicans, but my point being that I want to see it. So mm-hmm. much of our governance is invisible to me at this point, mm-hmm. and I'm not, you know, I'm not somebody who isn't smart enough to try and look for it. So my feeling is, and this is an initial gut feeling, good. I want to know what's going on in my country. I don't want it to be hidden behind closed doors. So that's my feeling about that. And then, you know, in relationship to what you're saying about the end of the American democracy as we know it.
Okay, what about this? Here, David Kurtz on Talking Points Memo, which is a political blog site, he says, one of the results of today's Supreme Court ruling, according to campaign finance reform advocates, is that companies will be able to avoid disclosing their spending in support of specific candidates by funneling the contributions through entities like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Well,
so does that change your calculus?
Sure. Sure it does. That changes my calculus. And I have a question. I mean, what is there a watchdog in place? And if there's, you know, I mean, in the effort to make it more transparent, if that's in fact what these conservatives, I hope, with our interest in mind, are making these decisions, which, you know, I doubt, but I hope. What watchdog organizations or what watchdog cabinet exists to help us? No.
Well, I think that basically the Supreme Court is saying, you know, open the floodgates. Anyone can give, and they can give directly, or they can give through the U.S. Apparently, this piece from TPM is saying they can give through another organization. Or they can go through three organizations, and the contribution money can get laundered three or four different ways, and it basically says anything goes is what it sounds like.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering if that's the case. If you think, can the American Republic survive that? If money's just coming from anyone, from any corporation, any person, any entity through any other, can democracy get through that? Or does it matter? Does it not matter? Given where we are today, I mean, it's not as if. Money has not been finding its way to campaigns.
That's right. Right, that's right. I mean, we just survived 8 years of Bush, and how did he get to office? We don't know. You know, there's a mystery shrouding that. So I mean, I think money is part of it, and I don't think it's the end. I don't think anything that's happening right now is the end, but that's the way I think. American democracy has not been working for us. That's clear. It's not because of Obama. He just got into office. So, you know, I support Obama, and I think that what he's been doing, I believe that he's an intelligent person. I believe that he has the best interests of his constituents in his mind, and that he's doing the best he can given the mess that he has inherited.
Thanks, Krista.
You're welcome.
So Krista's optimistic. She's still got her chin up. Let's see about Joseph. Joseph, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hey, Leo. As my girlfriend says, if voting made a difference, they'd make it illegal. You know, we really do need to stop worrying about whether it's Obama or anything. We need to stop worrying about who the people are up there. We need to stop worrying about what party they're in, and we need to start worrying about what they're doing.
Yep.
And we need to not, and I think a lot of people get shy away, oh, well, the Republicans are in power, so I guess I'm just going to stay at home and I'm not going to really do anything.
Yep.
Or the Democrats are in power. And the thing is that what the Supreme Court really said today is that, you know, you can, is that everyone out there, you can all have all the free speech you can afford. And that's what it comes down to. It's just totally about money. And but it's been that way for a long time. It's not this week. It's been that way.
So you're not thrown by the decision. Doesn't upset you. What you're saying to everybody, to all the listeners, is you need to keep your eye on the eight ball. And the eight ball is what legislation is getting passed, what
right.
rules are getting made, what is not getting passed, and that's. That's plain and simple what we need to focus on, and the money's going to find its way into campaigns.
Yeah, and don't worry about if the person who's your representative or who's any other one else's representative is not the one that you would have chosen. They're
uh-huh.
still your representative, whether they like it or not, whether you like it or not. They work for you, and you need to hold them accountable and put the you know fire to their feet, as it were.
So stay active. You're saying
absolutely.
Stay active.
Absolutely. And the thing is, we need to start getting together. And the thing is, what I think is killing us more than anything else is that nobody wants to go to the conservative neighbor or the liberal neighbor across the street and talk to him
mm-hmm.
and try to open up an honest conversation. Because, yeah, you're going to end up disagreeing on a lot of things, but every time I've done that, what I've found out is, you know something, they all want the same things. When it comes to health care, yeah, we all want a system that works, that's affordable, and that's going to work for our country.
So what would you...
And we
what
need
would...
to negotiate from there. What we've got now coming out of Congress
uh-huh.
is something that was actually mandated by the corporations and the people who are putting the big money into the campaigns.
Okay, so it looks as if the House Democrats and even the president is going to take their foot off the accelerator in response to the election in Massachusetts, and maybe that means that the current health care bills that have passed their committees and passed the larger bodies are going to not go any further. But should they try to amend those or change those? What is your thought on it?
The thing is what has, for instance, let's just talk about health care. Right now what we got is a bill that was really shaped more by people who are going to make money off it than anyone else, and that's the real driving force behind it. There may be a few carrots in there for people who need help, but there's a whole lot more in there for the people who are just plain greedy. And then we'd be better off going out and talking face to face with your neighbors who, whatever it is, they have other problems they have. They don't like the illegal aliens. They don't want to see someone who's not a citizen getting health care. They don't want to see non-workers getting health care. Whatever. You know, you can work that out face-to-face. You can find a way to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as we operate through a system that is totally owned and financed by companies that are out there controlling these businesses, it's not going to change. And that's what we've got to do. And I realize, and the one point I really wanted to make here was every time I tell people to do that, their first reaction is, oh, I don't want to get into an argument, or, you know, we end up devolving into an argument. And, you know, I agree. It's hard not to. You really have to get out there, talk to your Tea Party friends or your extremely liberal friends, whatever the case may be, and listen to what they care about and tell them what you care about. And don't try to get into a fight. You got to work with people to try to come up with an understanding and say, look, we've got to do something about making our government start responding more to the people than it does just to people that are buying influence.
Joseph, thanks for the call, Tom.
All right.
Okay, the phones are lit up, so, you know, I think that the stories this week are having an effect and galvanizing communities across the country, and I think that goes to Joseph's point that this is a good thing. Not to get decisions that are problematic or maybe that you disagree with, but it's good to have an engaged electorate. You know, I think that's what Joseph is saying. We need an engaged electorate, and we need to be engaged with each other as well. Next up, let's take Frank on line 5. Frank, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, man, I really got to say this, man. I've been listening to your show for the last 3 or 4 months in this station for about maybe 6 or 8 months. And I really got to say, man, you got an excellent show, man.
Well, thank you, Frank. You're making my day.
I'm serious about that, man. I tune in every Thursday. And actually, I listen to the station periodically throughout the week. But
what's on your mind? Thank you for the compliment.
Well, you know, you put out a lot today in your commentary, and first of all, I'd like to say what I think the president should do. Whatever he could do with 59 votes or
Well, Frank, should he bring all the parties? Let me ask you this: should he bring all the parties together, Democrats and Republicans, in one room, and say, look, you Democrats, we Democrats are not going to get the bills passed exactly the way we want them passed, and you Republicans are not going to get them passed exactly the way you want them to get passed. So, I mean, he's been trying to do that, I think, to some degree, but Republicans have said, no, we're not going to pass any of it. Now, in their defense, Republicans have said, we feel we're being railroaded, and we don't think the legislation being proposed looks anything like and bears anything in it that we want it to have in it. So we're not going to sign on to any of it. But do you think there is some bipartisan place left for the president to go to, or is there none?
Not with this group of Republicans, because I preach this every day, that what we pay these people to do, to go up there and sit around the table and come up with things that would better this country and better these people. But with these Republicans, you're just not going to get it. Because the Republican, this is their theory on everything. They do anything and everything to maintain their seat. Now, when they're in power, they do not bring any type of legislation to the table, none whatsoever. But when they're out of power, all they do is prevent anybody else from doing anything. I don't even see why we're paying these guys. You know, it's just a shame that we have to every day live our lives by this nonsense politics, terror, fear. You know, we need to do some things that we could go ahead with our lives and live our lives normally instead of all of this crap out here.
Frank, thanks for the call. Great to have you on. This is a big question. Will the lesson that Republicans take out of Massachusetts be, we can oppose everything and win elections? I don't think it's too hard to envision a situation where they do that, and 2 or 3 years from now, the story has changed completely. I mean, I believe in karma, truly. I believe in karma. And that would be, let's say, a cynical approach. Republicans say, okay, we won the thing in Massachusetts. You see, this utter, total obstructionism is working. We can just say no to everything and not make any constructive recommendations to solve problems, nor lend our votes to what we regard as at least acceptable or marginally acceptable ways to solve problems. It's not hard for me to see that the news utterly changes two, 3 years from now around that time. And suddenly we're seeing articles about the amazing resurgence of Barack Obama. Right? It was thought that Obama was over after the election in Massachusetts in January of 2010. And, I mean, right? I mean, this is the way things go, and especially when you take into account karma. So is that what Republicans are going to do? Or will Republicans say, look, we don't want to press our luck here. We won in Massachusetts. You know, we really need to get some kind of health care thing passed. We really do have some problems with health insurance companies and their tactics and other problems. So we got to sign on to something. So what will be the lesson that Republicans take? Frank says, forget it. You know, forget it. It's not going to happen. Let's see what George says on line 4. George, welcome to the show.
Hey. Well, first of all, Congress is the opposite of progress, and I think you ought to not do anything in the first place.
Not. I'm sorry. Say it again, George. Congress should not do anything.
Congress is the opposite of progress, and they shouldn't do anything in the first place. Yeah, I agree with that. Also,
But George, our Constitution makes provision after provision Section 8, right, of the Constitution, makes provision after provision for what Congress can do.
But they're trying to make up their own jobs. I mean, the problem with the situation is these aren't philosopher kings. These are low-life lawyers who don't have a clue about economics. And that's day one. You know,
but assuming, George, that there is a place for the federal legislature, and we do have a constitution which the states have signed on to, and assuming that The Constitution of the U.S. is not abrogated. Excuse me, I'm sorry. And assuming that the legislature of this country, through the constitutional process, is given the right to regulate commerce as it is given the right to regulate tariffs, and is given the right to regulate war, and is given the right to prescribe legislation, what should Congress do? I mean, shouldn't it do its job, which is to legislate?
Well, in thinking in terms of national socialism and a type of fascist competition between other countries, where you increase the social welfare of your basically your populace by, for example, enabling them with tools and job skills, that's not what corporatism is about. Corporatism is about the bottom dollar. They're going to offshore us. They're going to outsource us. The only thing that that court ruling that you're talking about do is basically give them the opportunity to increase our unemployment rate and decrease the value of our currency. That's what you're going to get, because they don't care anything. They can offshore their stuff, get it built elsewhere. Forget about national security. Forget about people being employed. That doesn't make any difference. The social welfare is not in their interest. Their interest is in basically not only laissez-faire, but in you know, the natural law of whatever you can get away with.
George, thanks for the call. Thank you. By the way, it's Congress that has the right to regulate the currency, the coin. Just so everybody knows that. That is Congress's job. Okay? It's the nation's currency, but it is the Congress's job to regulate and manage the currency. Just so we're straight on that. It's very popular to say Congress shouldn't do this and shouldn't do that and we should abolish Congress. Well, folks, I've got some news for you. You'll have to get rid of the Constitution. Don't think that you're making a constitutional case when you declare that Congress should be, you know, kind of put out of business. The constitutional case is that it is Congress's duty to regulate commerce and the currency and tariffs and duties and the military, and so forth. Next up, let's take John. He's been holding on line 6. John, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
Great, I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, Leo, I think you have a very great show. I've always told you, you need 3 hours.
Three hours?
Yes, sir.
It was two last week, John.
You need to come in from 1 o'clock until 7 time. Anyway, I have maybe a take on, really, I think what's happening is we might ignore it, but when you look at the news media, we never used to have people who are fanning the anger and hatred in the country. As Bill, what is it called, Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity's, Rachel Maddow's, the Keith Olbermann's. We never used to have none of these names associated to news outlets. Mm-hmm. When you have a news outlet like Fox, you have a talk show host radio like Sean Hannity. He actually comes as a Fox News programs and also has a private show. You have a conflict of interest there. These are the guys who are finding all the hatred and finding all the anger going on in the country. As for Obama, if I was to advise him, I would tell him two things. One, fire Tim Geithner. And number two...
Yeah, should he fire Geithner? I mean, I think he's gotten that advice...
Geithner is a relic of 2008.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why...
So you think Geithner was too tied to the Bush... He was with the Federal Reserve. He wasn't with the Bush administration, but he was the head of the New York Federal Reserve, and he was the point person for the bailouts. And you think Obama should have said, look, Tim Geithner, even if he liked him personally, he should have said, he's just too tied to the other deal, and we need to move on.
Right, and he's going to stain Obama, just like, remember the single statement that Bush said, Brown, you're doing a good job. Once you state that and everybody sees the opposite of what's happening, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Obama needs to realize this. Before his name gets tainted with all this mess going on, he needs to fire Tim Geithner.
Okay.
He needs to fire Janet Napolitano. He needs to fire, I think, the White House secretary.
Yeah, okay. All right, I got it. John, thanks for the call.
All righty.
So John wants heads to roll in the Obama administration, and I think there are people who concur with that. Is that the right solution? Do heads need to roll in the Obama administration? Will that get us some solutions to some problems, whether it's health care or whether it's global warming or whether it's jobs, etc. It's either Ali or Allie. It's either a man or it's a woman, right? But we'll find out. Line one.
Yes, this is Ali.
Ali! Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I think the president is doing the best he could do under circumstances, tough circumstances, being the president of this country, especially when you are in the skin that he's in. It's even more tough. And we have to look at that.
That's the guy doesn't have an easy job right now, does he?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. Not at all. Like the caller just said, when you got nuts over the airwaves, actually calling for the man to die, and then most of the country doesn't even refer to him as president. They just simply say Obama.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, Ali, which is that a significant part of the population, I don't know what percent, but simply don't even regard him as the president. And this isn't like liberals not liking Bush in that sense, or referring back to the 2000 election, which was contested. This is people who just don't even recognize his legitimacy.
And see, this is how deep it is, and then I'm going to let you go get other callers. Mm-hmm. It's into the people's psyche. And it's, you know, just listen to the rest of the callers today. And other stations, they don't refer to him as President Obama. We just simply say Obama. That's in the psyche of the American public. Don't recognize this man as the president.
I think it's a great point you make. Great. Okay. I think it's a terrific point. I think it's right on target, Ali. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. I think he's right. I think he's right on that a lot of this is happening at a psychological level. I think in the Massachusetts election, when Ms. Coakley, who, you know, apparently... I wasn't in Massachusetts. I went to school in Massachusetts and have a good feel for the state as a result. I spent 8 years of my life there, but I don't live there now. But I can sense that you are not really the best candidate when you're upsetting Red Sox fans. And apparently she did. I mean, she made several gaffes about the Red Sox. Well, I can tell you, just that, at that psychological level, there are a lot of people in Massachusetts who will not be able to vote for someone who can't keep their Red Sox straight. It sounds nutty to you, but it's true. So I think there's a lot of that psychology that's going on, and Ali points out to perhaps the biggest one, which is that a lot of people in their minds don't literally at the neurological level accept Barack Obama as President Obama. Next is Jose, who's been holding for a bit. Jose, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, man?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind?
Oh, man, a lot of things, man. At first, I used to be an Obama supporter, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, all about Obama, defending him and everything, because I used to hate Bush.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on, I started realizing that Obama's doing the same thing as Bush. It's everything that Bush has done, he's done it, man. He's expanded the war in Afghanistan. He's done more drone strikes on Pakistan than Bush did in his whole two terms.
So you share the criticism of the what we might call the liberal base of the Democratic Party, that Barack Obama has failed to deliver on the promised change that he came in with.
Yeah, man. It took me a while, too. It took me like about 8 months to realize he was full of crap, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But now I don't even consider myself a liberal no more. I consider myself like a libertarian now.
Uh-huh.
I'm just so disgusted with the Democrats. I mean, you're going to have a 60 majority in the Senate, and you can't even get nothing done, and then you're going to lose the most liberal state in Massachusetts. You know, it's just, I mean, I don't know how to say it, but...
Saying it. Thanks, Jose. Thanks for the call.
All right, man.
A caller called in earlier and said that it's not the Republicans, it's the Blue Dog Democrats who are allowing corporations to steer our government. And I think there are a lot of people who would say, again, the liberal base would say there are these conservative Democrats out there who refuse to sign on to this bill or that bill and sabotage the effort. And that's why they couldn't get the votes for health care or couldn't get the votes for something else. But, you know, the votes are what the votes are. The representatives are who they are. They're voted in by who they're voted in by. And so what are you going to do? I mean, that's the conundrum that Obama finds himself in. If you're going to pass something, what's it going to look like? And is it going to be something that you can tolerate? And what should his priority be now? Should it be for the party? Should it be for some agenda that he had an idea of going in? Or should it be, as I said before, you know, look, does he say, I've heard the voters, I'm going to get these parties in, and we're simply going to get past what we can get past. And it's not going to make anybody totally happy, but we got to get something passed on these issues. And so it's going to be less than what the Democrats wanted in health care. It may be more than what the Republicans wanted, or vice versa. I mean, there's an argument that that's what he's got to do if he's going to lead. If you're going to lead these disparate factions, you're going to have to lead the factions, because strong-arming probably won't work. That's my opinion. What does Joe think? On line three. Joe, welcome to the show. We just got a few minutes left.
Okay, hi. Considering the part about the elections and the Republicans and the Democrats, for one thing, I think you don't understand the depth of the divide between the two. This is war. This is not politics.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that no Democrat should ever lose an election to a Republican, because we outnumber the guys. The problem is the same elite class runs both parties, and their stupid, arrogant, lazy decisions and leadership are what's causing us to lose. We need to organize on a grassroots level so that we're one tight organization all the way up and down.
So that would, Joe, that would be your prescription to Democrats, which is that Democrats need to do a better job organizing. And there are a number of reports that that's exactly what happened in Massachusetts, was they simply got out-hustled and out-organized and took the election there for granted.
Same party leadership, man.
Yeah. Joe, thanks.
I got one other thing if you got any time.
I don't. I want to take two more calls. Maybe we'll have you next week. We got time for at least one quick call. Let's take Bill and then maybe Jerry if we still have time left. We're coming up to the end of the show here. Bill, you're on.
I have a question. Yeah, you there? I just really have a question. A lot of good comments today, by the way. And I think the guy who made the brownie comment, was that was really funny, and that was really right on. Geithner is the brownie.
And what's on your mind, Bill?
Well, what's on my mind is, how does this decision by the Supreme Court affect any possible future efforts to do public financing of federal elections?
I don't know. Charles Schumer, who is the senator from one of the senators from New York, is calling for in the wake of this decision, hearings on the ruling. So presumably, those hearings would be intended to understand what the practical effect, along the lines of what you're talking about, what the practical effect of the ruling means. And I think that's probably, I haven't read the story, but probably that's what Schumer is calling for. What does that mean in the wake? Because so often Supreme Court decisions aren't prescriptive in terms of action items. They're simply decisions on court cases. And it's left to legislatures and everyone else to interpret how do you put them into force. And so I think that's probably what Schumer's up to. It's a good question, though.
Yeah, but then the whole thing really goes all the way back to when they ruled corporations being treated as individuals. And so they're just building on
which,
that.
Which is 19th century law. 19th century law.
Right. So that was
Bill,
really
thanks.
My question. But
yep, we're out of time.
Thanks.
Jerry, I'm sorry, we're out of time. Didn't have time to take your call today. I am sorry. Thanks to all the callers who came in today. We'll continue to discuss this issue, because it isn't going away, I can assure you. Please get out and enjoy the weather. It is beautiful. Go out and smile and have fun and think about how to make things better. That's always the best solution to everything. Until next week, take care. It's been great having you. Thanks to Afshar for his work, as usual, on the board. Take care.
And KPFT's 40th anniversary upon us, it's time to make good on those New Year's resolutions. Maybe you're looking to be involved in your community this year, or maybe you want to network and make contacts or new friends. You can put your time to use by volunteering at KPFT. Here are a few opportunities. KPFT is always looking for telephone help for pledge drives. Email volunteer@kpft.org to be involved. KPFT also needs help in its music library. Email music@kpft.org to participate. Finally, our 40th anniversary event needs volunteers. Email volunteer@kpft.org to lend a hand during this historic year. Your volunteerism makes a difference, so get involved. You are tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
The hearts and minds of the world go out to those impacted by the devastation in Haiti. KPFT, your community radio